Hi there, this is Darren Spoo, pastor at First Baptist Church in Tulsa, and welcome to our weekly podcast. For more information about First Baptist Tulsa, check us out on the web, tulsafbc.org. First Baptist Tulsa has a simple mission, to glorify God in all we do. We want to make God look good because He is good. May God bless you with His goodness this week.
So I practice a form of scripture reading called Lectio Divina. It's a Latin phrase, and it really is not as fancy as it sounds. Lectio Divina just means divine reading. And if you were to practice Lectio Divina, you would go about it like this. You would decide, okay, for the next season of my spiritual life, I'm going to spend my time in this area of scripture. So last fall, I just decided I was going to spend time in 2 Timothy, Paul's last letter to his young protege, his young friend Timothy, before he himself died. Here is his parting wisdom to his young friend. So I decided to spend time in 2 Timothy. Then what you do each morning or whenever time you read the scripture is you don't really have a plan. You just pick up where you left off the day before and you read until you sense it's time to stop. So you could read a chapter, you could read a paragraph, you could just read the next line. And whenever a word or phrase pops, you just stop and you spend some time with it. Meditate on it, roll it around in your mind, then turn it back as a prayer toward God, and then you take that word or phrase with you as a traveling companion throughout the day. It's a way of extending what we call the quiet time into the rest of life. So as I said, this last fall I was in 2 Timothy, and I came across a line that I thought, not only am I going to walk with this scripture for the next day, I'm going to walk with this for a year. And this is a perfect text from scripture to talk about a new year. We all talk about resolutions. I hope you've made some spiritual resolutions. If not, I bring this here for your consideration. This is 2 Timothy chapter 2, and Paul writes this, "In a large house, there are articles not only of gold and silver, but also wood and clay, some for special purposes and some for common use. Those who cleanse themselves," and here's the part I like, "those who cleanse themselves from the latter will be instruments for special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work." So Paul starts by saying that in a large household, he's talking about the church, okay? We're like a large household, and if you've been around here for any length of time, you know that we define the church as a group of people. It's not about buildings or budgets or seating capacity. Those are all important, but the church is people. It's how Christians say we is the church. Church is a group of people who follow Jesus and the way of Jesus together. So we are a part of this large household together. Legos, still very popular in the world, popular around my house. Legos, the company, was founded in 1932 by the Christensen family. And there are now 86 Legos for every person on the planet. And there are roughly 1,015 Legos in my house for every person in my house. That's the ratio in our, because I step on them most of the time. And if you know Legos, they're all different shapes and all different sizes, right? They all fit together, though. So in a church, Paul's saying there's all different kinds of people, all different kinds of shapes and sizes and problems and personalities. And he doesn't use the illustration of Legos, he uses the illustration of containers in a home. Listen, the household has not changed much in 2,000 years. He says some containers in a home are gold and silver, they're used for special reasons, but others are wood and clay, and they're kind of used for common purposes and maybe even things we don't talk about publicly. So let's take this forward and apply this to today. You come to my house, I have lots of bowls around my house. And bowls are used for different reasons, okay? So if you come over to eat, I'm going to serve you macaroni and cheese in a serving bowl, okay? It's a white serving bowl we've had for years, okay? And it's appropriate for the occasion. Now, we have bowls that are even nicer, but they were given to us as a wedding gift, and they're family heirlooms, they're china bowls. We're not going to use those for you. You're not important enough, okay? Now, if the Queen of England comes over, then we'll bring out the china bowls, but not you, okay? But we have these nice, very appropriate serving bowls. Now, in the kitchen, though, we have another kind of bowl. It's a mixing bowl. We have this large beige bowl, and we just call it the bowl, all right? And we use it whenever we mix up something of quantity. So whenever my wife makes truffles, she uses the bowl. Whenever I make my world-famous manicotti, I use the bowl. I'm not making that for you. You get macaroni and cheese when you come over that, but that's my world-famous manicotti, okay? We use this mixing bowl. Take another step down. We have the dog bowl. I can't tell you that I've ever washed the dog's bowl. You know why? Because it's a dog's bowl, okay? I fetch it out from under the barbecue grill. I throw it down, put food in it. He eats in it, all right? Then on the lowest level, we have the toilet bowl, and I'm not going to go any further than that, all right? But we all have these bowls around our house, and they're all used for different purposes. That's Paul's illustration here. In a large household, there's all these different kinds of containers, and in a church, you have all different kinds of people, and we're all at different points of the progress, all different points of process in our relationship with God. One Catholic theologian gets it right. He puts it like this. He said, we are originally formed in the image of God. Then sin deformed us. When we come to Christ, we make the decision to reform. We are conformed into the image of Christ, and in eternity, we'll be transformed in the image of Christ. Now, here's the deal. All of us are at different spots on that continuum, and you can't control where anyone else is. The only person you can control is you. And so Paul says, if you're going to make a decision, if you're going to be concerned about who you are and where you are in this process, what kind of vessel you are for God to use, here's what you need to do. First of all, cleanse yourself. I'm going to look at this second sentence. We're going to spend some time. Those who cleanse themselves. Let me encourage you with the advent of a new year. Cleanse yourself. Find that one sin that you have let slip into your life almost unnoticed. Now is a perfect time to deal with it. I wrote mine down this morning. I know exactly what it is. I wrote it down. Here's the one that I need to get out of my life. Now, if you read the media, when a very public life blows up, it's usually one of three issues. This is the unholy trinity. Money, sex, or power. Maybe you should think in terms of your gender. Here's what I know. For most women, bitterness is an issue. Is that the sin you need to deal with? For most men, anger is the issue. We explode in anger, and it does immeasurable damage to our relationships. Or maybe your issue, maybe your sin is so much deeper, nobody knows about it. It's called fear. But it has compromised your faith. What is your sin that you need to cleanse yourself from? It's time to get to work. Time to make a New Year resolve to get rid of that. So we have a family here in the church, Jana and Brad Bendur, and Brad emailed me a few weeks ago and gave me permission to use this, but he was riding along in the car listening to one of my sermons, and their little daughter Claire was in the back seat, and she started speaking up. She said, Dad, Darren's sermons have really helped me out lately. And he goes, "What? How so? What do you mean?" She said, "Oh, I don't know, but I'm going to start being better so I don't have to listen to those long sermons anymore." Yeah. Whatever it takes, whatever motivation works, I don't care. But is it time to cleanse yourself? Now, I'm going to hop over a statement, but we're going to come back to it. We cleanse ourselves. Let's skip over an instrument for special purposes. We'll come back to that because I want to tag on to the idea of made holy. And I want to pair those two. We need to cleanse ourselves, but ultimately, it is God who makes us holy. So, if you want to be a follower of Jesus, you must be prepared to be different. Listen, the idea of holiness used all throughout Scripture is the idea of being separate, being set apart, being different. Don't expect to be a follower of Christ and just blend in with culture. So, in the days of Prohibition, when the sale of alcohol was illegal in the United States, grocers would still sell grape concentrate. And they would put a warning label on these grape concentrate containers on what not to do in order for it to become alcohol. You see what they were doing? Step one, don't do this. Step two, then don't do this. And what was disguised as a warning label was really an instruction label on how to make your own alcohol at home. There's an instruction label all over culture. And here's the label. Everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. That's the instruction label for our culture. But to us as followers of Jesus, it should be a warning label. If everybody's doing it, that's exactly when we should rethink that perhaps we need to do something else. So the reason I've paired these together, here's a really important part, don't miss this, the idea that we cleanse ourselves, but God makes us holy. Those two go together. Because if you want to clean up your life, you cannot do it without God's power, and God cannot do it without your permission. I want you to really hear that part. If you want to clean up your life, you can't do it without God's power, and God won't do it without your permission. It is a cooperative, collaborative effort to change your life. But if we do this, then we will become an instrument for noble purposes. Here's the transforming power of God. You ever feel like that you were made for more than what you are or what you're doing? That instinct is spot on. Too often, though, we associate that with just our careers or our family path. You are made for something incredible. You were made to become like Christ. And God can take anyone, and I mean anyone, and make them more like Jesus. So let me go back to the illustration of bowls around my house. I have an extra toilet bowl up in the attic. Don't ask why, but I have an extra toilet bowl around it. So let's say I know you're coming for dinner, and I decide to prepare a nice quiche for you. And so I spend the whole day, I scrub out this old toilet bowl, and I serve the quiche in this toilet bowl. I put it up on the table and say, bon appetit. You are not going to touch that quiche. But I assure you, I've cleaned it, I've sanitized it multiple times, it's spotless. You're not going to eat it because it's a toilet bowl, and it will never be anything more than that. Okay? Listen, I can't make a toilet bowl into fine china, but God can take anybody and make them like Christ. He can transform us into vessels for his noble purposes. There's no limit to the lives that he can change, including yours. Now, here's my favorite phrase. If we become instruments for noble purposes, made holy, cleansed, we will be useful to the master. Let me suggest this as a fantastic prayer for the new year. God, may I be useful to you. Useful to you. Now, Paul, in his writings, uses this word useful three times. Once is here. The second time is later in 2 Timothy, 2 Timothy 4. He says, send John Mark to me because he is useful. Now, Paul is in prison, and there's a backstory here. Earlier in life, when Paul was younger, he and Barnabas went on these missionary journeys together, and Barnabas had a young nephew named John Mark. He said, let's bring John Mark along with us. So they all went on this missionary journey, and halfway through, John Mark flaked out. He dropped out. He got homesick, went back home, really let the team down. A couple years later, Paul and Barnabas get ready to go out on another missionary journey. Barnabas says, hey, John Mark's grown up a little bit. Let's bring him along. And Paul says, absolutely not. Quite frankly, Paul was unforgiving. He was unforgiving. But John Mark had some growing up to do. So later on in life, much later, in fact, toward the end of Paul's life, he writes a letter to Timothy. He said, would you do me a favor? Send John Mark. He is useful to me. Paul had probably mellowed with time, and John Mark had grown up, and they had both learned how to get past old failures. Listen, you may feel like the biggest failure to God in this room, but you can still be useful to the master. In fact, here's what I believe. If you have failed in some area, then you are uniquely qualified to be useful to the master. So the other time Paul uses this is in Philemon, verse 11. Philemon is just a little bitty sliver of a book in the latter part of the New Testament. And Philemon is a slave owner who's a friend of Paul. Now, slavery in that day was radically different from what we know in our Western world. Philemon was a slave owner, and Paul had run into one of Philemon's runaway slaves named Onesimus. And he sends Onesimus back to Philemon. You need to make amends with your master. And so Paul sends a letter with Onesimus back to Philemon. And he says, Philemon, don't punish Onesimus. In fact, send him back to me because he is useful to me. Onesimus was a man who was on the run, but he was useful. Listen to me. Maybe you have spent 2016 running from God. You are useful to him still. You can become useful to the master. And here's the last phrase. Made holy, useful to the master, prepared to do any good work. So just a personal account, if you'll indulge me for just a moment. This year I'm releasing a book. April 1st, a book comes out. 5 years ago, I was this close to signing a contract on that book. And at the 11th hour, everything fell apart. And it was devastating. Personally, I was radically deflated, probably more so than ever I had been. Here was a dream I wanted to happen, and it just all fell apart. But now in God's timing, it's all coming back together. Here's what I now realize, and my wife and I have spoken about this more than once. Had this happened 5 years ago, I would have not been ready. Knowing what I know now about what has been required and what will be required in the next couple months, I wasn't ready for that. Our family wasn't ready for that. God saw fit that I needed more time of preparation for this moment. So here's the deal. Some of you might find yourself in a holding pattern. You don't know why, but you're waiting. Or maybe you do know why. Maybe you're single and you're wanting to be married. Maybe you're on a career path and you want to turn around. Or maybe you're in an educational track that you can't wait to have it finished, but you're in this waiting game right now. So as you're waiting, prepare. And then when you are prepared and God gives you the opportunity, don't wait. When you're waiting, prepare. When you're prepared, don't wait. You'll know it when it comes along that God puts an opportunity in front of you and it's time to go. That's when you're all in. Prepared to do any good work that God has assigned you to do. So John Glenn died just a few weeks ago. I followed John Glenn for years, from his first ride around the earth to his last ride on the space shuttle. In fact, I went to John H. Glenn Junior High School, is where I went to school. And we know a lot about John Glenn. Hopefully you've picked up the stories about his wife. Annie was born with a speech impediment. In fact, in The Right Stuff, it's alluded to in one part of that movie. Annie was born with a speech impediment, and her family was so frustrated with her. Her parents, her sister, her close friends all used to finish her sentences for her. They knew what she was going to say, so they just said it for her. But there was one childhood friend who never finished her sentences, little Johnny Glenn. He would wait to see what she had to say, patiently. God is not a God who's going to finish your sentences for you. He'll make an offer. Here's who I want you to be. Here's who I want you to become. And then he will respect you. He will love you enough to let you say yes or no. So what say you today? God has given you the offer that you would be cleansed, that you would be used for special purposes, that you would be made holy, that you would become useful to the master and prepared for any good work. And what God is waiting for, he won't say it for you, but will you say yes?